Liebe Zuhörende, ihr hört in dieser Stunde nun die Sondersendung Pride and Prejudice, ein Brexit-Special von und mit mir, Anne Horn, hier bei Loro 90,2. Der Brexit hält Großbritannien und die Europäische Union ja nun mittlerweile seit 3 Jahren in Schach. Da den Überblick zu bewahren fällt schwer, deswegen hier nochmal eine Zusammenfassung.
Im Juni 2016 veranlasst der damalige Premier David Cameron das Brexit-Referendum. Ergebnis: Mit einer knappen Mehrheit stimmt die britische Bevölkerung für den EU-Austritt Großbritanniens.
The UK has voted to leave the European Union.
Da David Cameron selbst nicht geglaubt hatte, dass die Bevölkerung tatsächlich für ein Brexit stimmt, tritt er einen Tag nach dem Referendum als Premier zurück. Theresa May, ursprünglich selbst Brexit-Gegnerin, soll nun das Steuer als neue Premierministerin übernehmen und die Brexit-Verhandlungen führen. Um ihre Position bei den Brexit-Abstimmungen im Parlament weiterhin zu stärken, beruft sie am 8. Juni 2019 Neuwahlen ein. Mays Plan geht jedoch nicht auf, im Gegenteil, ihre Tories verlieren nach den Wahlen ihre absolute Mehrheit im House of Commons. Die gegnerische Labour Party um Jeremy Corbyn gewinnt dagegen neue Sitze im Parlament. Eine Hängepartie, bei der keiner in den folgenden Monaten eine absolute Mehrheit bei den Brexit-Verhandlungen im Unterhaus gewinnen kann. Und folglich kann Theresa May niemanden mit ihrem ausgehandelten Brexit-Entwurf überzeugen. Sie wirft im Juni dieses Jahres das Handtuch.
I will shortly leave the job that it has been the honor of my life to hold. The second female Prime Minister, but certainly not the last.
Ihr Nachfolger als Tory-Parteichef und Premierminister wird der Innenminister Boris Johnson. Er übernimmt damit auch die Brexit-Verhandlungen mit der EU. Sein Ziel, den Brexit unbedingt am 31. Oktober 2019 über die Bühne bringen.
Let's get Brexit done.
Zur Not, so betont er immer wieder, auch ohne Abkommen. Doch sein Versprechen, so zeigen die aktuellen Ereignisse, wird auch Johnson nicht einhalten können. Am 28. Oktober gewährt die EU mit der Flextension erneut einen 3-monatigen Aufschub bis Ende Januar 2020.
Das war unser Redakteur Josua Schlag mit einer kurzen Zusammenfassung vom Brexit. Das ganze Hin und Her hat natürlich auch Einfluss auf EU-Bürger und Bürgerinnen in Großbritannien und auf Briten und Britinnen, die in der EU leben. Auch die nun in Rostock lebende Britin Lucy Cathro ist davon betroffen. Wie sie den Brexit wahrnimmt und was das mit ihr macht, genau darüber wollen wir jetzt in dieser Stunde sprechen. Das Interview wird auf Englisch stattfinden. Und damit möchte ich jetzt das Interview beginnen. I would like to ask you to introduce yourself to our audience. So who are you? Where are you from? And since when do you live in Germany?
Okay, my name is Lucy Cathro, as you said. I was born in Britain and spent my childhood and early adulthood in Britain. But then in 2001, I moved to Germany. So I've actually been here for almost half of my life by now. And I work at the university as an English teacher here in Rostock. I was born in the northwest of England in the Lake District. Yeah.
So you live here for quite a while, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I've lived in Rostock itself since 2007, and Germany since 2001. So I've kind of seen. I saw the introduction of the euro. I've been here for
yeah
a few monumentous events. Yeah.
Yeah, you witnessed that. So would you say that Rostock is your home?
Oh, that's a really good question. Yeah, I think I would.
With a reference to Jane Austen, I called this show Pride and Prejudice, and I think she delivered a perfect book title or title in general for the whole Brexit theater. So I was wondering how you would think about it.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I'd never actually thought of it in those terms before, but it really is a mixture of absurd pride, British pride, Great Britain, kind of Britain does everything, Britannia does everything in isolation and rules the world. Yeah, coupled with this prejudice against everything that's deemed to be foreign and non-British. And it really is a good fitting title, but also very kind of depressing, sad statement on the whole Brexit debacle.
So do you actually remember your thoughts and emotions when the discussions about Brexit came up and what you felt like when the results were announced that Great Britain would leave?
Yeah, it was a bit like the whole thing with the US elections and with Trump. So when it was kind of first raised as a possibility, it was actually just disbelief. You know, I thought they can't actually be serious, you know, and then it was kind of clear that we would have a referendum. And even then I was like, you know, this is obviously a ridiculous idea, but, you know, in the end, everything will be okay. You know, people can't be that stupid. That's why I honestly thought, that, you know, it's going to turn out all right. Like I thought in the case of America as well, you know, people can't be that stupid. They won't elect him. Here I thought people won't be that stupid. They won't vote to leave the European Union. And then when the results were actually announced, it was literally just disbelief. You know, I just could not believe it. I really, no, it was like a bombshell. And then a friend of mine called from England. She's British, but she's married to a German. And she was actually in tears. You know, she said, I don't want to live in this country that has voted this, you know, this awful thing. And I know that people were very, very shocked. Yeah.
Yeah, this is interesting that you say that because I, on the one hand, I also have personal connections to England. My partner lives there, and from him and the environment where he lives, I also got the feeling that everyone didn't take it so serious when Brexit came up. And also the last part that you mentioned, that your friend was in tears, I read a lot of studies on Brexit and how it affects mental health, and it's really frightening how much depression it caused among people, and anxiety, and yeah, fear for existential fears, yeah, basically. Yeah. It's sad. And I wondered, I guess you voted yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, it was fairly, well, I mean, not complicated, but I had to vote because obviously I wasn't in the country. I had to vote through a proxy. So I basically gave somebody else my vote and told them to vote for me. I was also only just eligible because there's a limit when you've been out of the country, I think for 15 years, then you're no longer eligible to vote. I mean, I was just inside this 15 years, so I could luckily vote. But if there is a second referendum, for instance, then I probably won't be able to vote in that. But anyway, so I asked a friend of my father's if he would be my proxy, if he would vote for me. And actually he found out in retrospect that he voted to leave, so he kind of he placed my remain vote, but at the same time he voted to leave the EU. So it was kind of a bittersweet at the end. It was almost as if he'd cancelled out my vote.
On one end, it's good that he, you know, didn't abuse your voice to also give another leave vote. But aside from that, did you actually talk with people in your environment who voted for leave? And if yes, what did they say?
No. To be honest, I have avoided the subject with people who I suspect of having voted leave. And even people who I know voted leave, you know, I've just not talked about it with them. That's probably quite a British thing to do. You know, you don't talk about politics, things that will lead to arguments. But I know, for instance, that my father suspects that his brother voted leave, but he, like, there's a kind of agreement between them, a non-spoken agreement that they're just not going to talk about it. So neither of them really wants to go there and kind of, discuss their reasons and get into the fights that would probably ensue.
Yeah, I bet it would probably cause a breakup in the family or so. Yeah, you're nodding. Yeah. I guess, a bit more intense than here in Germany with AfD and right-wing populism and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, possibly similar kind of situation that you kind of look at people and wonder, did they vote AfD? Did this person vote leave? It's kind of, I guess it's a similar thing, and you don't necessarily always want to confront it. You know, it's something that makes you feel a bit uncomfortable, but that, somehow it's easier just to avoid talking about.
So I guess I actually get a little bit of insight in how Brexit already affects you. I mean, it affects obviously your personal life. I mean, there's like a topic that you don't want to talk about in the family. But is there also more yeah, levels where Brexit does affect your life and how?
I actually have German citizenship and I got that in 2014, so before this whole Brexit thing kind of came up. So it's not, on a practical level, it's not really affecting me. You know, I have all the rights of a German citizen. I am a European, thank God. But there are things, you know, considering kind of next time we go to England, what kind of situation, you know, do I need a new passport? My British passport is expired. Will it be easy, you know, kind of will it be easy to get a passport? Will the kids' passports, you know, if we travel in on our German passports, what kind of weights are we going to be looking at? You know, what's going to happen at the border? Just things like that are kind of at the back of my mind. You know, I don't imagine us kind of being held up at the border for days and days, but, you know, it's just so much uncertainty. You just don't really know what's going to happen. And my parents both spend a lot of time in Italy. Like they kind of retired to Italy, so that they're very uncertain about their future there and if they'll be able to stay there. And one of my sisters also lives in Italy. She's a teacher there. She's not quite sure, you know, what's going to happen. So as a family, it has really affected us kind of just in terms of, yes, stability and future plans. But for me personally, apart from being invited to various interviews and to give interviews in the newspaper and stuff, it's not really it's not had a major impact on me yet, but who knows?
Yeah, I can actually agree from my side. What I hear from people living in the UK who are actually French or have a French origins, that they are also stressed by not knowing what is going to happen, and they complain a lot that they don't get enough information or any information by the government, so they don't know how to prepare, they don't know about their citizen rights and if they're allowed to stay. A few of them live in the UK for more than 50 years now, and they don't know if they can stay after Brexit, if Brexit ever happens. I mean, we never know.
Yeah, it's. I get the feeling that the government itself doesn't know. I mean, I hope that they must have thought about these matters, but there's been, I also, as a kind of British or dual national in Germany, only official communication I received was last week, where the passport office sent me an email saying, your passport may no longer be valid for travel to Europe, but not is or is not. You know, there's no certainty. There's no kind of, this is what you have to do. This is what's happened. This is the course of action. It was like, please check our website. You know, absolutely no definite information whatsoever. And it's kind of, unsettling on this uncertainty. But I know that the authorities in Rostock and I think in everywhere in Germany, they have contacted British citizens living here to ask if they would like to, you know, if they would like to apply to become a German citizen to make things kind of easier. So lots of my British colleagues have been undergoing that process just recently, getting German citizenship. But as you say, I think the authorities in Britain haven't done the same for the European nationals who are living there. I don't think there's been a kind of general invitation, become a British citizen, which is typical.